Good morning, and thank you for joining us today for the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. And we are live here in the studio for a very special Wednesday edition of the Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez, your host today, along with Tom Carty, a student from the Sandpoint Waldorf School who's been interning here at the radio station for the last 8 months. Good morning, Tom Carty.
Good morning, Ms. Prez.
It's very nice to have you, and we're going to hear about what you have planned for us. It's a very special segment, will be our first segment. But first, I also want to let you know that after Tom's presentation, we have second guest in the studio, Jean Girth from 350sandpoint.org. And Emily Cleveland from Idaho Conservation League, and they'll be here to talk about the upcoming climate march that's scheduled for this Saturday, April 29th. But first, I think we should hear about the weather, don't you think so, Tom?
Definitely.
Okay, well, what do you think we're going to say?
Nothing good.
Rain. More rain and more rain. So right now it's 39 degrees out, and today we have a 90% chance of showers. High today, 49. Low tonight, 37. 90% chance of rain. I'm not going to say it all the way across the screen, but the only place where it's less than 40% chance of rain is on Saturday, and it's 30% chance of rain. The highs throughout the week, I think the highest looks like 53, and the low gets down to 35. So it's spring. And we hope that all the showers bring what in May, Tom?
May flowers.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I just want to remind you that this is 88.5 KRFY, and we will have a second guest, and that's Jean Girth and Emily Cleveland talking about the People's Climate March that's coming up this weekend. But, Tom, I think it's time for you to tell us what you have planned for us.
During my time interning at KRFY, I decided to interview Sue Vogelsinger, who worked for President John F. Kennedy. This is the pre-recorded interview that I am about to present. If you cannot listen to the whole interview, it is available at krfy.org this afternoon. I hope you enjoy.
I wanted to ask you a couple questions before, because we're still running through the beginning song, so we have a few seconds to wait for that interview to come up, and it is pre-recorded. And what did you find during this interview that was so interesting?
Kennedy's personality in general is really incredible to hear about, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
Okay, there's a lot of interesting things. This is about a 27-minute interview. Very exclusive. I know that Sue, having worked in the Kennedy administration, and she just came back from the East Coast where she was doing a television documentary about those years in the Kennedy press corps.
Yes.
So we still have a few seconds. I'm going to try to scooch this song over. Anyways, we hope you enjoy the interview.
Yep, enjoy. RFY listeners. This is Tom Carty coming to you from downtown Sandpoint at 88.5 KRFY, your local community radio station. I'm so happy to have Sue Vogelsinger, a local resident who worked in the Kennedy administration, join me in the studio today. Hello, Sue. How are you?
I'm fine, Tom. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
Sue has a very interesting and amazing story to tell. So without further ado, let's begin. Let's start off before Kennedy's presidency. How exactly did you come to work for him in the first place?
I had just graduated from college with a degree in home economics and went back home to the Washington area, and I needed a job. And there was a job in the Senate for Senator John F. Kennedy before he decided to run for, or he probably decided, but before he announced that he was running for president. And I got the job.
Before he was president, he was a senator, as you just mentioned. Could you tell us any experiences you had working for him then?
Well, I didn't really want to be in Washington. I wanted to earn enough money to go to California. So the job that I had been hired to do turned out to be quite boring. It was before the days of computers. I was entering political information from trips that he and his staff were making around the country, and entering those on little index cards days before the computer, obviously. Very boring. So I said I was going to leave, and he got word that I had said that. In those days, they had trouble keeping staff because they worked very long hours and the pay was very, very low. So I guess he was interested in keeping somebody that could type and take shorthand pretty well, which I could, which is why I got the job. So he heard and he called me into the office one day and he said, I heard you're leaving. Why? And I said, because I'm bored. And he said, well, what are you doing? So I told him what I was doing. And he said, well, I'll see whether I can make a change of some kind. I thought, that's very nice of him. But I'll be darned, a couple of days later, indeed, I was switched to the legislative staff, which meant I got to do some research and do some original letter writing. And he started calling me into his office for dictation all the time. I don't know that people in this day and age even know what dictation is, but that's what I was doing. So I got to know him pretty well, and it was became a very interesting job.
Were you just mainly in the background of the Senate at that time?
Senate offices were very crowded. There were only about three or four offices. It's in a suite of offices in the Senate. So we were right there. I was right outside his door.
Did you ever have any interactions with other senators?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, the senator across the hall from us was a senator by the name of Richard Nixon.
And as we all know, they ran it against each other in the 1960 election.
Yes.
Were you involved with the campaign for Kennedy's presidency?
I was. I was lucky enough to be able to travel with the candidate during the campaign. It's interesting to remember in this day and age, since we just went through a campaign that seemed to last for years and years and years, that back in those days, Kennedy announced that he was going to run for president in January of 1960. The campaign did not really start in earnest. Well, that's not quite correct. There were a few primaries in the spring. The campaign really started in the summer after the Democratic convention and the Republican convention, and pretty much was to end at Labor Day. It didn't totally end, but it slowed down. So it was a very short campaign as compared to this day and age.
That's pretty incredible. Where were you when you learned that he was elected?
I was in the Kennedy campaign headquarters, or election night headquarters, was in Hyannis, Massachusetts. And I had been sent there a week before to help set up for the press to cover that night. Three people set up. Amazing in this day and age when so many people are involved.
Were you there for Kennedy's inauguration?
In a manner of speaking, I spent the night before the inauguration in the hospital, I guess from exhaustion. They could never find anything wrong. But I got to the White House the next day.
Working at the White House must be a unique experience. Why did you decide to apply for a position?
Well, I got the position because I'd worked on the campaign and during the Senate office. They just said, we assume you want to go on to the White House. And I said, yes, I certainly did.
Say, for example, I would want a job at the White House to work for the president. What process would I have to do, and what did you do?
I didn't do anything other than get a job in the Senate in the first place with Senator Kennedy, and I really don't know what you would have to do in this day and age. A lot of it is networking, as it was then, and it is still today. Knowing people, being sure you know people in an area in which you're interested, and you begin to hear about jobs. I suppose you apply online, but I can't imagine that that would work very often. There are a lot of internships in the White House, and that's another way to apply. And that's probably done through your congressional representatives, I suppose.
Did you have to go through a lot of background checks?
Well, the FBI does that security, yes, a security check on anyone that works in the White House. Yeah. I never saw mine, although supposedly I'm allowed to now.
Having a job in the West Wing is a pretty high-level position. Was that the section where you worked?
Yes, we were right around the corner from the president.
What kind of clearance did you have?
Top secret, I believe.
Did you ever hear any confidential information?
Yes. Oh, yes. All the time. But happily, I was smart enough to know what was something I shouldn't say. And nobody ever said, this is what you need to do, and this is what you shouldn't do, and...
So just to clarify your job, could you tell me a little more about what you did?
I worked in the White House press office, and the job of the press office is to be sure that you provide as much information as you can to the press about what the president is doing and why he's doing it, in an attempt to get the best possible story out about whatever it is. All policy, obviously, but that was what we were supposed to do.
So for this time, why don't we move on to talking more about President Kennedy? A question I imagine a lot of people ask is, what was he like to work with?
He was great fun to be with and to be around. He had a fabulous sense of humor, very smart. He had some interesting habits that we all loved. He was a real gossip. He loved to know what everybody was doing. He would wander the White House. Not wander. He didn't have time to wander. But he'd occasionally walk through the offices. And it became a rule that if there was something you had on your desk you didn't want him to see, you better keep it out of sight all the time. And I remember one time he came into my office. Well, I didn't have an office. There were very small quarters in the White House. My desk, I should say. And somebody had sent in a Mad magazine. I don't know if that's still around, Mad magazine. That's a very political comic book. And somebody had done a real pretty nasty number on him, and he'd heard about it. He saw it there, and he said, "Hey, what's in this?" And I told him there was something about him in it. And he said, "Is it any good?" And I said, "Well, I don't think so." He said, "Well, that's okay." And he took it and just walked away. He had... He would walk around and he'd take people's pens. He'd pick up pens from people's desk without meaning to and put them in his pocket and go away. At the end of the day, he'd put them all out on his secretary's desk, and everybody was invited to come by and pick up their purloined whatever writing tool he had managed to take away that day.
So I understand that his handwriting was quite difficult to read. Could you tell me a bit about
that? His handwriting was impossible to read. There weren't too many people in the White House that could really read it. I was one that could. There were several others, but it was kind of an interesting job to try and figure out what it was that he had put down there. In the early days of taking dictation from him, his Massachusetts, New England accent was, to me, almost like listening to a foreign language. And the first time he dictated to me, I had no idea. I really had no idea what he was saying. And I was terrified. I put it all down. I went back out to my desk and typed up something or other. I don't know what. I suppose I was hoping I would remember what he said, which of course I didn't. I thought, well, this is the beginning and the end of this job. And this was still back in the Senate. And he talked very fast in addition to this language problem that I had. Anyway, he just laughed about it. He said, "I guess this is not really what I said." And I said, "No, I know it's not, but I couldn't understand." And he said, "Well, we'll keep trying." And he did, and we did. And eventually I got to be able to understand. He also slowed down, thank goodness, somewhat after he became president. So it was a little easier to keep up with him.
Did you meet with him often?
I spent a lot of time with him, yeah, because I was part of the traveling White House staff, too. So I was able to go on almost all the trips, all the European trips, all the trips out of the country. So it was quite an experience.
That's nice. Did you ever have any casual conversations with him?
Yeah, a fair number. He was very funny. I mean, we were together an awful lot on trips or on planes or on... I mean, he just expected everybody to know everything. So... anytime you walked by his door, if he happened to see you and he happened to have a question or something to say, or he wanted to talk about something, and you'd go. So, yeah, it was pretty informal.
Did he discuss papers a lot?
He read papers all the time. He read, everybody on the staff tried to keep up with him. He probably read 3 or 4 papers before he even went into the office. And we all tried to do the same, especially those of us in the press office, because that's who he came to first. And I walked by his office one day, and he saw me out there. Nobody else was around. And he said, "What's the meaning of this?" And he's holding up some paper. He's all the way in his office. I was just walking down the hall. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I wonder what he's I took a wild guess about what he might be talking about. Again, I wish I could remember what it was, but I lucked out. I knew what it was. And I said... I didn't know why it was in the paper, but I knew what he was referring to. That's all. He didn't care.
You mentioned that you met with him on many occasions. Did you ever happen to meet Jackie or any of their children?
Yes. Oh, yeah. After, between the election and the inauguration, we spent a lot of time in Palm Beach. And one of my jobs down there were to take visiting dignitaries. He was interviewing people for cabinet posts and ambassadorships and all the top slots in the government. My job was to take them from the hotel where we were all staying out to the house where he was staying. But he would invite us over to come over for dinner or to come over and watch a movie or to come over and do something or other. They had the family boat down there, sort of a yacht, and we were invited to use that. Sometimes he'd come out with us, sometimes he wouldn't. But
wow,
I saw, and the kids, of course. Well, the John John was just a baby. I didn't see much of him, but Caroline was around a lot.
What was Jackie like? I understand that she was a very kind person, but could you tell me a bit more?
She's probably very underrated. She was very smart and very funny. But she did have that voice that made everybody think, who is this person? But I didn't spend much time with her. That was the East Wing and the social part in those days. And I worked on the West Wing.
What was it like to work in the White House? And was it always serious there?
No, it wasn't always serious. It was extremely stimulating. It was you were constantly pinching yourself and saying, oh my gosh, I'm working in the White House with the President of the United States. But it was fun, and it was a constant challenge. And the one wonderful thing about President Kennedy was that he made everyone feel as though they could do more than any of us really individually thought we could do. He just expected you to do it, and as a result, you did. So all of us performed at a higher level, I think, than we probably did before or after, quite honestly.
During the time you spent at the White House, were there times that you were under pressure from events such as the Cold War, the space race, or the Bay of Pigs?
Probably one of the worst was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And we were there 24 hours a day, pretty much. Somebody was always there in the White House. They're all frightening and scary. But again, it was just so exciting, and there was so much going on and so much happening so fast that I really never had a chance to be afraid. And maybe I was too young to know better, too.
Any particular experiences from this time?
No, nothing special that I remember. It was just a constant case of keeping up and being on the alert, being nerve-wracking.
Presidents travel places a lot. Did you ever travel with him on any of his cross-country trips?
I traveled on, yes, lots of cross-country trips. The trips that were the most fun were the trips, European trips, or trips out of the country. And I was in Berlin for the Ich ein Berliner speech, and I was in Ireland when he got back to that wonderful country his family had come from. We went to South America, Canada, Bermuda, all over the place. So they were wonderful trips because you learned so much and it was so fascinating. And you traveled with the President of the United States, which by itself was fun.
Where was your favorite country that you visited?
Probably Ireland.
Why don't we move on to some of the more serious parts of his presidency? These next several questions are some of the tougher ones. Could you share to us about your day on that terrible and tragic event in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963?
I was on the Air Force One. That was a political trip, and there really wasn't an awful lot for the press staff to do. There were only two of us on that trip and one press secretary. We were nearing the end of the trip. We were in Dallas, obviously, and the person I was working with on that trip, his name was Christine Camp, and I were working state, decided we didn't need to go in to hear the speech. We'd heard him all before. We knew exactly what he was going to say, obviously. So we'd work on materials that were needed for the last stop. So we did not go in the motorcade on that trip. We were on Air Force One. And we were working on, I don't know what we were working on, but we were working in one of the plane stewards, Air Force stewards came rushing in and said, pack up your stuff, we've got to leave. And we said, what happened? Of course, they said, the president's been shot. We don't know any more than that. And a few more minutes later, they came in and said, he's been killed and we're going to leave, we think. They didn't know what we're going to do. Chris and I sort of packed up the stuff that we had on Air Force One because we had both been on Air Force One traveling and working. But we knew that that President Johnson, the new president, would come on the plane and would need his staff with him. So we decided we would get off the plane. Nobody told us to. And I wish in retrospect we had not. But anyway, we did. And then eventually, of course, the planes both took off, the president's plane, and I went back. Chris and I went back on Air Force Two, which is a backup plane called a backup plane. It's not a specific plane, but there's always a second plane that carries Secret Service agents that aren't on duty, that are off duty, carries some members of the press. It carries, in this case, it carried much of the Texas delegation who were on this trip because the Texas stop was a particularly important one politically. It was not a very happy trip back, needless to say. The Texas delegation, oddly enough, and I get in trouble when I say this, but it happened, where some of them were quite pleased with the events of the day, or not at least upset, to the point that several Secret Service agents got up and came over and sat with us so that we trying to distract us from what they were saying.
Wow, I can't believe that someone would...
Well, I can't believe it either, and people have questioned it, but I go back to notes that I took at the time, and I said that at the time, so I know I didn't make it up. And I heard, Chris heard the same thing I did, but she's not with us anymore.
Could you explain more about how everything played out after you learned of his tragic death until Air Force One left Dallas?
It was all so confusing and chaotic, I really can't. I mean, I think what everybody's read is pretty much... you know, the truth that the President Johnson got on and said he wanted to leave and they had to wait for the body to come and Jackie was on the plane and it was great confusion. And then getting a judge to swear Vice President Johnson in as president, and that all took some doing. So there's a lot of hanging around and being in shock.
The months following his death were very tough for the country. What was your day-to-day work like?
It was very strange, to tell you the truth. The Johnson staff, but President Johnson had asked that we all stay on, which was very nice. And in some cases, I'm sure, important for senior, for anybody, really. So we did stay on. I thought that was a mistake in a lot of cases. And certainly for me, I shouldn't have stayed on. So it was hard. There's not enough room, for one thing, for everybody. The West Wing is not big at all. So trying to help the incoming, well, first of all, to go through the funeral. I mean, we needed to be there for that. And that was 3 or 4 days worth of, 24-hour a day working. A lot of it was 24 hours a day. But anyway, and after that, I really don't remember very much. My immediate boss, Pierre Salinger, the press secretary, decided that he was going to leave and run for the Senate in California. There was a Democratic Senate seat opening. A senator that was holding it was ill and was going to retire. And he asked me to come with him. So I said, yeah, I'd do that. By then I was married, so I didn't want to go out there full time. But he said, well, come 2 weeks and come back 2 weeks. So that's what I did for a while.
Did he end up winning?
He won by default. In a way, he got the office because the senator who had been sick, Claire Ingle, his name was, died, and Pierre was appointed by the Democratic governor of the state to take the seat, but then he lost to a movie star. Very appropriate.
Could you tell me a bit about more about John F. Kennedy's funeral?
Well, it's been, you know, it's been pictured and talked about in film so many times. I spent a lot of that time in the White House because there was, you know, a gazillion questions. There was press from all over the world that had to be taken care of, had to know where to go, what to do, what they could do, what they couldn't do. And that's really was my job. So I had to stay there. So I didn't get to an awful lot of it. I got to a mass and the mass at the National Cathedral. I don't even remember whether I got to the cemetery. I'm not sure I did. Because there was still so much to do at the White House that I couldn't leave.
Did you ever return to the White House to work there again?
I did. I certainly never really expected to, but I did. I worked for Jimmy Carter, and I also spent 8 years in the Clinton White House, but as a volunteer, although I had all the, I had what they called a hard pass so that I could go any place in the White House that I wanted to or needed to. And I probably spent 2 or 3 days a week there. And I basically worked with Hillary Clinton. I did spend another 8 years in the White House.
So with Jimmy Carter, did you work directly with him?
No. I actually, in that case, I worked for, I started working for Rosalynn Carter's President's Commission on Mental Health, or White House Commission on Mental Health, it was called. I really wasn't involved with the, very closely with that White House. I did run the press operation for Jimmy Carter's inauguration. That's a job that nobody on the campaign ever wants, so they have to look around to find somebody. It's the one campaign I didn't work on was Jimmy Carter's, but I ended up working. They finally called me because nobody else would do it and said, you know, would you run this press operation for us? So I said, sure. I needed some money at the time. I had children by then, so I was not taking full-time jobs. I was trying to take part-time jobs.
And then working in the Clinton administration, if you mentioned that you had a high security pass.
It wasn't. I don't know that it was high security, but it was a pass that I could just go in and out of the White House. I didn't. If you normally have to be cleared, even the volunteers, you have to be cleared to go in. I had this pass. I could just come and go as I wanted. But
did you ever talk to President Clinton?
Yeah, actually, I spent not a lot of time with President Clinton, but a lot of time with Mrs. Clinton. And one of my jobs during that time was helping on her publicize the book, It Takes a Village, not publicize it, but help setting up the press tour for it, the book tour for it. That book was a private undertaking, not a public undertaking. So they wanted someone who was not on the White House staff, and I wasn't officially on the White House staff, to be the go-between the White House, Mrs. Clinton's staff, and the publisher. Part of that, at the end of it, was doing a lot of radio interviews, setting up radio interviews around the country for her, which she loved doing because she could do them up in the private living quarters of the White House. So she'd call and say, why don't you set up some more interviews? I've got some time. Let's do it. I'd spend quite a bit of time up in the living quarters she was doing the interviews, obviously, but I had set them up, so.
What would you say is one of the best stories about your time working for President Kennedy that most people would not know about?
Oh, goodness. That's a tough question. Good question, but there were so many times that were fun. I guess one of my favorites was a trip that he took to Amherst, Massachusetts. I think it was the dedication of the Robert Frost Library or something. Anyway, it was a short trip, and on short trips, frequently only one of us would go, and I got to go on a lot of those trips, which were fun because you spent a lot of time with the president. On that trip, he decided to rewrite the speech that he was going to give, which he frequently did. That's a very short trip between Washington and Amherst, on Air Force One anyway. He was going so fast and had so many thoughts, and Frost was a favorite of his, and he wanted to do this right. And I got absolutely nothing of it, I think. Probably a couple of squiggles. I still have those squiggles, which meant nothing at all then or now. And he looked down when we landed and could see that I hadn't done anything. He said, "Have all that, Sue?" And I said, "No." He said, "Okay." He said, "It's all right. I know what I'm going to say." And off he got, just laughed. But that was so typical of him. Fabulous guy to work with, be around.
So I researched you on Google, and I came up with your appearance on Vintage Roadshow. Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, that was fun. I took, it was a very last minute thing, and I thought, well, I'll take a few Kennedy things and see what they have to say. So I just shoved some stuff in a bag, and I had included some sheets of paper that I had from speeches that he'd given that he had made corrections on himself, which he frequently did. Most of that stuff, I don't know, got thrown away, got lost because everybody was moving. Why I even had them, I can't remember. But I took those, and that's what they were very, very interested in. So they did an interview on it, and it was fun. It was very interesting. As a matter of fact, those things were auctioned off just yesterday. And I, in New York, at Bonham's, some big auction house, and I have no idea what the results are, but a lot of my things were auctioned off there.
Did you ever make any other radio or TV appearances?
Yes, I've done a lot of interviews over the years here and there. not a lot, but enough. I'm one of the few people, I guess, that's still alive, for heaven's sakes, that worked in the Kennedy White House. There are some of us, but not a lot.
As this interview now comes to an end, I would like to ask one last question. What was your favorite part or event that happened during your time working in politics?
Being in the White House, obviously, but it's hard to pick a particular time, and the Kennedy White House particularly was wonderful.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for sharing your story with the KRFY listeners. I have enjoyed very much hearing about your time in Washington, D.C. I hope our listeners have also. Thank you, Sue Vogelsinger.
You're welcome.
Thank you for tuning in, KRFY listeners. If you did not catch the whole interview and would like to hear it, you can go to krfy.org under the podcast section. I will now hand the morning show back over to Susie Prez and Chris Bessler to finish the second half of the morning show. You are listening to 88.5 KRFY, and this is Tom Carty signing off and wishing you a great day.